405266.
I just want to mention real briefly, too, that every voice you hear on the radio at KBOO is a volunteer, someone volunteering their time, and we know that you can support that kind of volunteerism right now by picking up the phone, 877-500-5266. Thanks to everybody who's become a member or renewed your membership, and for those of you who haven't yet, what are you waiting for?
KBOO would like to thank our community partners who've donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by the Roxy, a diner located at 1121 Southwest Stark Street and serving breakfast and burgers anytime, open 24 hours, closed on Mondays. Lunch was provided by Sizzle Pie, a vegan, vegetarian, and meaty pizza place located at 624 East Burnside Street. Dinner was provided by Marrakesh, at 1201 Northwest 21st Avenue, serving traditional Moroccan food. For more information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 right now.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the screening of Now is the Time, Healthcare for Everybody. The screening takes place on Saturday, February 18th at 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church in Portland. Now is the Time, Healthcare for Everybody is a documentary film that advocates for universal, affordable, single-payer healthcare for everyone and demonstrates the power of the people to make a difference even in the face of seemingly insurmountable obstacles. Again, that's Now is the Time, a documentary screening Saturday, February 18th at 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church, 1211 Southwest Salmon Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the KBOO homepage under Community Events.
The time is 11:01. You're listening to KBOO Portland, where momentarily we'll be handing you the food show. Today, Chris Siegel has lots of guests, including the author of Meet Me at the Bamboo Table. And Anita and Chris will be talking about how food can nourish the body, community, and our whole selves. So stay tuned for that. And this KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Garden Spout, specializing in indoor gardening equipment, including horticultural lighting, environmental control, hydroponic and organic nutrients, and pest control. The Garden Spout is located at 4532 Southeast 63rd, just south of Foster in Portland. Information at 503-788-GROW, and also by ADX, a collaborative hub offering access to shared wood, metal, screen printing, jewelry, and digital design shops throughout through a monthly membership program. The ADX Makerspace Learning Center and Fabrication Shop allows people to bring their ideas to life. And they're open every day at 417 Southeast 11th in Portland and at adxportland.com. Stay tuned for the food show.
Some drink for the dry in my throat. Need for the world to recognize it. Everybody's in the same holy boat.
Welcome to the KBOO Food Show. I'm your host, Chris Siegel. At the end of the program, I'll have a conversation with food systems activist Nikki Silvestri. Nikki was recently in Portland for the Organicology Conference. She's the former executive director of People's Grocery in Oakland and is a leader in supporting thriving communities, economies, and natural environments. I'll also be joined in the studio for our monthly garden conversation with permaculturist Marisha Auerbach. But first, we're encountering new levels of divisiveness in the current political climate. As empathetic people, it is our responsibility to try to make connections with people in an attempt to quell the fear being spread throughout our country and the world. And what better way to make those connections than through food? I'm joined by professor and author Anita Verna Crofts, who recently released the book Meet Me at the Bamboo Table, Everyday Meals Everywhere. In the book, she recounts some of her most memorable meals and the impact they had on her and the people she shared them with. I do want to mention that this is during our membership pledge drive, and she has been generous in donating a few books for listeners who call in and support KBOO. We'll have more information on how to do that, but first, I want to welcome Anita to the studio. Thank you for joining me on The Food Show.
Thank you so much. It's so good to be here.
So, to get us started, could you give us a bit of your history? When did you first become interested in traveling?
Well, I was lucky. I have two teachers as parents, and so it started off with road trips in the summer out to visit grandparents in Wisconsin. I grew up in Greater Philadelphia. But I also have a mother that very much wanted her children to be citizens of the world. And so she was really the one that encouraged adventure, whether it was in your own backyard or overseas. And so from a young age, I was able to start seeing parts of the world. And that just put me on a path to be looking for opportunities to expand my horizons.
And when you decided that you wanted to start collecting and writing down your most interesting meals for the book, how did you make those decisions? How did you decide that you wanted to start writing some of those food experiences?
Well, I'm absolutely someone who is always thinking about my next meal. I love to eat, and I also am from a writing family. And so the combination of whether it's what you put in letters, what you think about when food is a possibility for gathering. And so I was very fortunate in that I'd had a blog for a number of years, thinking about the intersection of food and community and culture and identity. And I was very fortunate to be offered an opportunity to write the book. And so it was a matter of sifting then through a combination of journals, letters, blog posts that I'd had, and began to decide what's going to be the composition in the same way that you might compose a meal. What's the book going to look like?
Well, I want to talk a little bit about what the book does look like. So there are a number of stories, but there are also a lot of photographs in the book, and they're mostly of food and places. And so I'm wondering why include all the photos? And in a world where, you know, cookbooks are filled with these professional photographers and food designers, you know, why use the photos that you used?
Yeah, no. So from the very beginning, I was very fortunate to work with an independent press in Seattle called Chin Music Press. They're wonderful. They're in Pike Place Market. And they put me in touch immediately, as soon as the project was hatched, with a wonderful graphic designer. And something that Dan said from the very get-go was, I want this to be the kind of book that someone can pick up for 5 minutes or somebody can pick up for 5 hours and they're going to learn something. As you know, having read it, it's not a cookbook. It's a book of personal essays. And it's important to me as a communications professional that along with the written word, there was a strong visual component because I've done photography ever since I was in high school. And so it's a collection from the cover on of all the different stages of how I've captured photos over my life. The cover has slides from the era of the 90s where we would send off film and you wouldn't know what you'd gotten until you got back from your trip. Now we're so used to the ubiquity of our digital screens that we can take a photo and know immediately we've gotten it. But it was really important to me that these concise essays had an element of a visual accompaniment. And I really wanted the book to have that rich visual experience for people because food is very sensory. And while a book can't give you the smell of a meal, and I can hopefully through my prose help you taste it, the visuals also help that experience.
Well, and the book it encapsulates all these multicultural experiences. And one of the stories, it started with a little anecdote about you being a professor at the University of Washington, how a lot of you had Indian students who were coming to school, and they thought you were going to be Indian because your name is Anita. So I'm wondering how working for a university has built your appreciation for multicultural experiences.
Oh, it's almost incalculable. I'm very fortunate to work at the University of Washington. You know, this is one of the largest public universities in the Northwest and has a tremendously rich international population, both in terms of people that are actually on visas to study at the university, and then also the rich immigrant population that exists in Seattle and beyond. And so for me, my first experiences, the first 6 years that I spent on that campus, was very much immersed in the international student experience. And so for me, part of the classroom learning isn't simply what we absorb in a textbook or encounter in the library. It's also the people that we meet, that we cross paths with. And there's nothing like a university campus to have almost a microcosm of the world.
So we are going to be talking for a while longer about the book, but I do want to mention that it is our membership drive right now. And so we're going to be back in a moment to talk more with Anita about her book, Meet Me at the Bamboo Table. But what we need now is for you, the listener, to step up. If you like hearing stories from people that are trying to build communities in the face of a power structure that is trying to drive us apart and instill in us fear of others, then we need your support in keeping in the powerful storytelling we do here at KBOO alive. And one thing we do want to mention is that if you do support KBOO now, we have copies of Meet Me at the Bamboo Table available. So I'm going to pass it over to Liz and Will, and they are going to tell you how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
Thanks, Chris. My name is Liz. I'm here with Will.
Hello.
And I'll tell you a little bit about the book in just a moment, but first we have some really important numbers for you. 877-500-5266. That's toll free in the continental U.S. If you are listening to us in Hawaii or Alaska or Canada or Mexico or anywhere on planet Earth. Even England. Hey, England. Hey, there'll always be an England. you could go to kboo.fm and become a member that way. Let me tell you a little bit more about this book. If you become a member at the $75 level, $75 is $6.25 a month, you can pick up Anita Croft's book, Meet Me at the Bamboo Table. This is a terrific way to both support KBOO and get yourself a terrific book by a really interesting guest. I'm really excited to hear more about what she has to say. You can become a member, as I said, at the $75 level. That's just $6.25 per month. Our volunteers are waiting to take your call. You can become a member at this monthly sustaining level, and it's safe, secure. You don't have to remember to send in your money every month. It happens automatically, and our volunteers are standing by. 877-500-5266.
That's right, folks. These fascinating conversations with very interesting people. And we do have that book available, Meet Me at the Bamboo Table. I recommend calling right now. You can get that as a part of the pledge you make today. So please call us at 877-500-5266. I also recommend going online at kboo.fm. It's very easy and very simple.
Thanks.
You are listening to The Food Show on KBOO Community Radio. I'm Chris Siegel, and I'm joined in the studio by Anita Crofts, author of Meet Me at the Bamboo Table. So how did you choose the specific stories that ended up in the book?
What I did is I thought about what were the stories that I wanted to include, and what came clear to me is that the stories that made the cut were often stories, by and large, where they were countries where I'd spent significant amounts of time. It wasn't a country where I'd been for a weekend, with only a couple exceptions. But if you look at the 21 essays and the 15 countries, I'd say at least 12 or 13 of them, it's a couple months or more, in some cases like China, a couple years. So it was really the countries where I'd had the most amount of time.
So I want to kind of turn to the book now a little bit. There was a passage about tea that I wanted to read real quick, and I'm actually going to ask you to read a passage in a moment, but so here it is. There is never a wrong moment for tea. News arrives of misfortune, put the kettle on for comfort. Good news comes at last, steep a mug and revel. Fever and chills, turn to tea for its healing properties. Neighbors do for a barbecue, iced tea, please. So I love the idea that tea is something for every occasion. And so what do you find about tea and other food that complements all these moments in our life?
Well, I'm so glad that you mentioned tea, because I started my morning with tea that I brought down from Seattle with my good friend Rachel Gold, who is a DJ here on occasion at KBOO. And for me, these elements like tea that accompany these larger conversations, when you think back to profound moments you've had with people that you love or people that you don't know but you're getting to know, often when you think about the trappings around those conversations, something like tea or a side dish or a very special piece of their culinary history is a part of that conversation.
So I was just listening to a podcast where the interviewee was talking about how when Americans travel, which Americans rarely do, they mostly end up at resorts where they're around other people like them. So as a society, it seems like we have a lack of multicultural interactions that help us build empathy for people not like us. How does food help bridge that divide?
Well, I think that food has a remarkable way of acting as an unofficial form of a shared language. We all have hunger. We all have meals that are meaningful to us, dishes that are meaningful to us. And so to the extent that one can sit down at a meal, the bridge that perhaps we might feel divides us shrinks. And I think it's very important whether we're overseas with a passport in hand, and I encourage everyone to get a passport, or in our backyard, as I've said earlier in this interview, I do think that taking that opportunity to meet someone at their table is a gesture of not just goodwill, but also openness to growth.
So I am going to ask you now to read a passage from the book. It's a passage on a chapter called Breakfast in Syria. So if you could read it, that would be wonderful.
Certainly. Humanitarian agencies are often thought of as being in the business of providing things, tents, water, blankets, food. However, giving life to stories is important, and they deserve to be shared with the wider world. War zones, disease outbreaks, and natural disasters can turn people into abstractions and statistics. Humanitarian communications mindfully document stories that show resilience, optimism, and staggering perseverance despite unspeakable sorrow and horror. Perhaps most importantly, telling stories in a way that preserves the dignity of those involved reminds us all of what we have in common, such as the fact that life continues amidst upheaval. You get up in the morning and you make breakfast for those that you love.
So I love that passage because it does. It kind of gets to the fear that permeates our politics today, that some nameless person from a faraway country can come and do harm to us in our communities. But when you, what you do there is that you give that nameless person a face. Like, this is somebody who's having breakfast. And I'm saying just people in general. Like, if we're able to humanize them, then they become real, and we can't, it kind of quells that fear that is being created. So I'm wondering, how can food help us bridge the disconnect we have with everything happening in the world around us?
Yeah, it gets to the heart of that quote in terms of reducing the fact that people are too often reduced to statistics, whether it's here or overseas. And I think that the idea behind this particular essay and the particular protagonist of this essay, Waleed, and Waleed is Syrian, and as people will see when they call in and donate and then get this book and be able to read, the importance of what food can do in helping, as you say, humanize the other, whatever that other is, whether it's somebody who's tens of thousands of miles away from us or someone here in a city that we share. So it's important that meals act as that, it's almost an unofficial form of diplomacy.
I really love that story. I'm wondering if you could just share in brief kind of what happened, how you got connected with Waleed.
Right. So as you said, I work at the University of Washington, and I'm fortunate enough to have opportunities to do humanitarian communications now and again around the world. It's a part of the work that I do to help international NGOs more effectively tell their stories and use their staff on the ground to bear witness and then to share those stories with the wider world. And I was fortunate enough to be asked to go to work with an international NGO called GOAL. They're Irish, and they have offices around the world, including Syria, which is their largest operation because of the conflict that is now 5 years old and is still raging. And I was in Turkey, southern Turkey, because Syria is was too dangerous at the time for GOAL to actually have their Syria offices in country. And the training was to take place over 3 days in a city called Antakya, but the border was closed between Turkey and Syria. This happens quite often because of the migration across the border. And so unfortunately, people like Waleed, who are GOAL staff members, were not able to attend the training in person, but instead were able to join remotely via an online a chat program. And I'd given my trainees an assignment to take three photographs that told a story out and about in the streets of Antakya. And Waleed was the kind of individual who, even despite the connectivity issues, had that irrepressible personality that just sailed across the virtual space. And I'd really enjoyed his efforts to stay online, to be part of the training, despite all odds. And so he emailed me in the chat box immediately when I'd given this assignment, and he said, "How am I to do this assignment, Anita? It's unsafe for me to go outside because his city had been bombed the night before." And so thinking about, as I said, I'm always thinking about my next meal. The first thing that came to mind was that perhaps he was having a meal at his apartment. And so I said, "Well, I bet you're about to have breakfast. Could you tell a story about that?" And he immediately wrote back and said, "Yes, I think I shall." And so sent me three photographs. There was the story of he and his family sitting down to breakfast, which to me speaks to the fact that even acts that perhaps we might think of as a mundane, they take place even in war zones. And it's important for us to remember that what we see in the headlines, what we hear in the sound bites, do not tell the full story. And to me, the idea of his breakfast was emblematic of that truth.
So unfortunately, we are about out of time, but I want to, I have a couple more questions. One, you are going to be back in Portland soon.
I am.
To talk about your book. Could you tell us a little bit about that event?
Well, I'm thrilled that I'll be at Annie Bloom's in Multnomah Village Tuesday. So coming up in just a couple days, Tuesday the 21st of February. It starts at 7 o'clock. It's a wonderful independent bookstore, as all you Portlanders know. And I am just thrilled that I'll be able to come back here to Portland and speak a bit more about the book, sign copies, and answer lots of questions.
And you can find more information about that at the KBOO website on the food show page. Lastly, this is the membership drive here at KBOO, so I'm wondering if you have anything to say about the importance of community media.
Well, I am a huge advocate. I'm actually the president of the board of the Seattle Globalist, which is a community-centric, community-driven, hyper-local media outlet up in Seattle. And so to know that I'm having an opportunity here to support important community media, especially in this day and age, couldn't be more important. It's a thrill.
Great. Anita, thank you so much for coming on the Food Show and talking with me.
Chris, thank you so much.
That was Anita Verna Crofts, author of Meet Me at the Bamboo Table. And you can pick up a copy of her book right now by supporting KBOO during our membership drive. Enhance your multicultural perspective while helping our wonderful community media organization. Liz and Will are going to tell you how you can help out.
That's right. And it's a great honor to be here with working with Liz and to listen to this terrific show. And I know Annie Bloom's bookstore. It used to be very close to the Oregon Commission for the Blind. And independent bookstores are very important, and so is independent media. And you can support the independent media that you're listening to right now by picking up the phone and dialing 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-5266. Your cooperation with this community is so important. It makes you part of the community. Instead of just being a listener, you can be an active participant. And that's a great opportunity. There are very few cities in this nation left that have an independent media outlet. And so we should all be very grateful for KBOO. You can also donate online at kboo.fm. And my friend Liz is sitting with me, and she will tell you all about the book you can get right now, Meet Me at the Bamboo Table. Isn't that right, Liz?
That's right. Meet Me at the Bamboo Table, which could be yours for a membership donation of $75. That comes out to $6.25 per month. Our volunteers are waiting to take your call and explain how you can become a monthly sustaining member of KBOO. Just pick up the phone and call 877-500-5266. We have some people to thank. Thanks to Lindsay in Malala.
Thank you, Malala.
She is a new member. Way to go, Lindsay. Thanks to Kathy in Lake Oswego.
Thank you, Kathy.
A new member. It's good to hear from the outlying areas of our listening area. Thanks to Susan in Portland. Also a new member.
Thank you, Susan.
And thanks to Jean in Hillsboro. Hey, Hillsboro.
Thank you, Susan.
A new member. All these new members.
This is
terrific. And I got a note here from Kathy, who was driving down the road in Lake Oswego, and she was listening to the show last hour and said, this is what I should be listening to. Why haven't I been listening to this? Why haven't you been listening to it? But for those of you who are listeners and have been listeners regularly for a long time, your question is, why haven't I been supporting it? Well, maybe you have. And if you have, thank you very much. And if you haven't, why not? Now's the time. This is the last day of our winter membership drive. This is your last opportunity to show your support for KBOO in the winter of 2017. And it's as easy as going to your phone and dialing 877-500-5266 or to go online at kboo.fm. Just to remind you, for $75, $6.25 per month, you can pick up Anita Croft's book, Meet Me at the Bamboo Table, which she's been discussing with Chris here on the Food Show today. If $75 is not the membership amount that you can support, pick a number. Put a monetary value on what KBOO means to you. I know that may sound a little crass, but this is how we are able to stay on the air. Our members support us. 80% of our operating budget comes from individual members. So it's really important. Everybody who calls up, everybody who goes online, everybody's contribution matters, and now's the time to show your support. Will?
That's right. It's so important right now, and you can show your support and be part of the KBOO community. You can also volunteer your time. I recommend doing that. That's what I do. I work a couple of days a week here, and I get so much out of it. And we are at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. I know it's raining out there, and it's a pretty crummy day, but please come on in, drop off a donation, come back here, meet the people at Pledge Central. We have some great, great volunteers who are eagerly waiting for you to show up.
You can hear Will in his fabulous British accent in person. In person. What are you waiting for?
Dial 877-500-5266. It's so important, and you can make this happen.
That's right. And if you decide to come in and become a member in person, as somebody did earlier this morning, it was always very exciting. We like to make much of our members, and we'll give you a tour of the station and thank you in person. And also, if you take your receipt from your membership over to Cider Riot, which is a cider tasting room just around the corner from us on 8th and Cooch, they'll give you $1 off of your first pint of cider. And, you know, in these trying time, cider is really a necessity for getting through the day. So you can come in person. We're located at 20 Southeast 8th between Burnside and Ankeny in inner Southeast Portland. We have this really cheerful mural out front. We're easy to find, and we're right off a bus line. We're right on a bike path, and you know, so there's all different kinds of ways to get to us. You can also, again, pick up that phone, 877-500-5266. Don't forget, we've got copies of Anita Croft's book for $75. I think they're going pretty fast, you know, so if you want one, now's the time to pick up the phone. We've only got a couple left. And we do have a goal for this hour. It's $500. And we can make that goal with your help. So say 5 of you become members for $100, or 10 of you become members for $50, or 20 of you become members for $25. You know, however you want to break it down, it doesn't matter to us. What matters is that you decide for yourself what financial value KBOO has in your life. What does it mean to you to have this invaluable source of community information and fabulous music? And all of it is stuff that you can't find anywhere else on your radio dial. What does that mean to you? Decide, and then pick up the phone right now and call 877-500-5266, or again, anywhere on planet Earth at KBOO.FM. Again, we're running out of copies of Anita's book. They've been going like hotcakes here. $75 minimum pledge. Of course, you can pledge more than that if you like. $75, just $6.25 per month. That's, you know, a latte or two.
Heck of a bargain.
Hey, you know, it's really great. It's really great. So what are you waiting for? 877-500-5266. Thank you.
That's right. It's up to you.
You're listening to The Food Show on KBOO Community Radio. I'm Chris Siegel. It's the most important part of the garden season, planning time. That said, there are a number of tasks we can get to out in the garden. And to talk about the garden, I'm joined by Marisha Auerbach. Marisha, welcome back to The Food Show.
Thanks, Chris. It's good to be back here with you.
Before we jump into some planning, I'm just wondering, is there anything that you're getting out of the garden right now?
Oh, yeah. I'm pulling parsnips, and I could pull some potatoes or some beets, some carrots. I have a lot of different things in the garden. My greens are rather small, but I do have chard and kale. They were really knocked back by being in the snow, but some of them are regenerating. And as soon as that snow melted, I've had chervil all winter long. Once it was uncovered, it just bounced back, and that's been really great for our winter salads.
Nice. Yeah, we had kale in ours, and it definitely took a hit from the snow, and I'm hoping pretty soon it'll start to bounce back.
Yeah, it seems to be all about quantity. Having lots of kale plants going in the winter can keep us eating kale all winter long, and then also having an eye on what varieties you plant.
So what are some strategies people can use when thinking about the layout of their garden?
Well, I like to first identify what we call in permaculture the sectors, the off-site influences that can either help enhance your production in your landscape, or that can degrade the production. And so then you can either choose to use a sector or block it. So sectors, again, are off-site influences, like the sun. You know, as we look at how the sun is changing every day as we approach the spring equinox, that's something valuable to consider as we put our peas in the ground, which I did just this week. I wanted them to have a really warm microclimate as far as warmth can go in February. So I'll look at where are my sectors, my offsite influences, sun, wind, pollution, you know, other things like that. And then from there, I'll interpret the different microclimates of my landscape. And some things want to be in really hot microclimates, and that's where I save for growing my tomatoes and my peppers and my eggplants. And other things are going to want some shade broccoli or kale to prevent it from getting aphids in the summer. For the broccoli family, kale, lettuces, those things I like to protect from the heat of the western sun. But I planted my Fuyu persimmon, so it got the heat of the western sun. Microclimate awareness can be quite important.
Great. So we've talked about seeds on past episodes of the Food Show. And so I want to jump in now, starting those seeds. So when should folks begin starting plants?
Well, I just got my peas in the ground and I pre-soak them. I'm actually getting ready to leave the country, so I'm kind of jamming for getting everything in the ground before I leave so that I don't miss a whole month by being down south. So my peas went in the ground. You can start your brassicas indoors, the broccolis and the cabbages for spring harvest. Tomatoes and peppers can be started indoors at the end of the month. And then next month, we just have a whole bunch more seeds that can be started.
And then starting your own plants indoors, what's the difference between starting your own plants and then purchasing starts from the feed store?
You know, here in Portland, we have some really great companies that provide high quality starts at some of our feed stores. So there's a big gradient of what you can expect to buy when you get them. Now, if you start them indoors and you can tend to the plants well, you have some good lights for starting seeds, you're able to keep your seeds damp and you start in good soil with seeds that have been adapted to our climate at the right time, then that can be even better than purchasing from the store. But it takes attention. The starts that I see at People's Food Co-op or Naomi's Farm Supply from Wildcat Mountain look beautiful. Those are great starts. I do want to remind people that if you're buying starts in four packs, that those four packs don't give your starts a lot of room for their roots to grow out. So make sure you don't just sit on them for a while. You want to make sure that you're transplanting your plants out before they get root bound in those little plastic pots. And I know that I've been designing a vegetable start CSA that I'm offering this year where my customers can get one flat of vegetable starts every month from April until September, with the exception of July. And I've been designing that so people can get a reliable amount of starts every month. You can also get a half share. And I'm not the only one. There are a number of different farms that are offering vegetable start CSA subscriptions. So people listening can find a vegetable start CSA if they're interested in their area. I've worked with Little Starts, which also offers that vegetable start CSA, and they're in North Portland.
So it's been raining a lot. And I'm wondering, what can people do to take care of their waterlogged soils?
Well, one thing that protects your soils before all the rain is putting mulch on it. It's amazing how much compaction a raindrop can give to your soil. So if they're not mulched now, mulching would be a good idea for easing compaction and taking care of waterlogged soils. Also, if you know that your soils are waterlogged and having trouble draining, you can add compost once they dry out to help with that drainage. You could also top dress with compost. But when we get a lot of rain, it tends to wash out the nutrients from the compost. So that's something to be aware of.
And then how will people know that the soil is dry enough for planting?
Well, I like to say that when your soil is dry enough for planting, it's like a good snowball. Or it actually that's inaccurate. I say when it's wet in the summer, wet enough, it's like a good snowball. When it's dry enough for planting, it's actually a little bit less than a good snowball, where you make a snowball and then it falls apart slightly.
So I want to ask you, you're just now beginning your workshop series throughout the season. Could you give us the rundown of what to expect this year for your workshop series?
Sure. We started last night with a week evening on planning the garden, designing it, and laying out the framework, talking about fruit trees and berry bushes. Next month in March, it's going to be on Wednesday, March 22nd. That's the only day that my workshop series meets on a Wednesday. Otherwise, it's usually on Tuesday evenings. And in March, we're going to be talking about indoor seed starting, early season plantings, and perennial crops. In April, it's going to be on coal crops. That's the brassica family, broccolis, greens, and soil building. And so we'll talk about composting. We'll do talk a bit about mushrooms, growing mushrooms in the home garden, and soil building strategies. In May, the class is on May 2nd, and we're going to focus on warm season crops like the tomatoes, peppers, and eggplants, cucumbers, squashes. We're also going to go into the floral world with talking about edible flowers, plants for attracting pollinators. And I think it's in that class that we'll be also focusing on weeds, because that's the time when a lot of those weeds start flowering so that we can get them before they self-seed in the garden. On June 6th, we're going to be talking about maintenance and harvest. How do we keep up the harvesting throughout the season and pests and diseases?
And then, of course, we'll talk more as you come back to the food show. No, I like that. It sounds like it gives people an idea of what to expect during the season for themselves.
Yeah.
Marisha, thank you so much for, again, coming on the food show.
Thanks, Chris.
That was permaculturist Marisha Auerbach. For more information about the classes Marisha offers, you can visit her website, permaculturizing.com, or head on over to the food show page on the KBOO website. Coming up, I have an interview with food systems activist Nikki Silvestri. But first, we're closing in on the end of our membership drive and want to end strong. If you appreciate the work we do here as volunteers to bring you information that is both useful and entertaining, then consider supporting our efforts. Here's how you can do your part.
You can pick up your phone and call 877-500-5266 or go online anywhere on the planet, kboo.fm. My name is Liz. I'm here with Will.
Howdy.
And we are here supporting the food show and Chris and all of his terrific guests today. And we know that you guys enjoy listening to the food show, which is not on every week. So you make a special point of tuning in to hear it. And that's really important. And so we know that this kind of programming is of value to you. What is that value? Is it $60? Is it $90? Is it $120 per year? It's up to you to decide. You know, put a number on it and then go to your phone and call 877-500-5266. I want to suggest a particular number to you, $75 a year. For $75 a year, you can pick up a gift certificate for a Filipino brunch with Chef June Robles at XLB. This is for a $75 minimum pledge, and this will get you an amazing brunch for three courses, drinks, specialty cocktails, and beers.
That sounds good.
And it sounds amazing, and the description of the food is fabulous. And you know, $75 is a lot of money up front, but you don't have to pay it all at once. You can parcel it out over the months at $6.25 per month. Our volunteers are waiting to take your call and explain how safe and secure and easy this is. And Will, what number do they call?
Well, I think they should call 877-500-5266. It's very important that you folks do that out there, because it sounds like a delicious meal, especially with the booze included. I recommend calling 877-500-5266. You can also pledge your support online at kboo.fm. And it's very simple, very easy, and you'll be making this community a larger and better place, because KBOO has to pay electric bills, we have to pay our staff, and that, you know, free speech isn't free. It has to be paid for. And there is so much rhetoric, so much BS out there, that when you support KBOO, you're supporting the truth and you're supporting the radio station that you listen to and care about. So please pick up the phone, dial 877-500-5266. This is the last day of our pledge drive. And this is the opportunity you have to make it happen.
Thanks.
You're listening to The Food Show. I'm Chris Siegel. I recently had the chance to sit down with Nikki Silvestri, who is an amazing activist working towards building thriving communities, economies, and natural environments. Nikki runs a consulting firm called Soil and Shadow, which she talks about in our conversation. When I talked with her, Nikki had just given the keynote speech at the Organicology Conference. She's an incredible communicator who has the ability to combine vulnerability and wit in her conversation. And a quick note, at one point a Sting song came on during the interview, which is why Nikki starts laughing kind of out of control. So here is Nikki Silvestri. You love soil. You say you're a self-proclaimed soil geek. What's the connection between soil and social justice?
Everything. I mean, being a Black Studies person, I can't really think about the beginning of social injustice in this country without thinking about land use and the working of the soil. in particular, and how to develop a labor source that could work the soil in a way that would be economically beneficial for the gross domestic product. So that's really the connection, is the beginning of this country, and the way that land use over time and the way soil is used exploits people. And so if we can start there and pull that thread to what's happening modern day around food, fiber, and every other resource that comes out of the soil, then we have a place to move forward.
I guess it seems like your work is at the intersections of a lot of different kind of aspects of life, the environment, social dynamics, social justice. You talk about carbon sequestration, and you do it in a very poetic way, talking about that intersection. Could you tell us a little bit more about what your thoughts on carbon sequestration?
One thing I love about carbon sequestration is that it actually really is complex, right? You've got Ohio State University that has all of these studies about exactly how much carbon we can sequester from the atmosphere and put it back in the soil. And that's completely dependent on different geographies, that's dependent upon the techniques used. It doesn't stay in the soil forever. So really, carbon sequestration for me is a piece of increasing the pace of the carbon cycle. And carbon at this point is just stuck in a bunch of different places, and it's not cycling anywhere, which is why it's having detrimental effects on us. And so what I like to think about there is just, how do we create the circumstances to make sure carbon's moving quickly?
Wow.
So this is a kind of a large question, but what is a just food system?
A just food system is one that meets the needs of all the stakeholders in the food system. And so when I think about sustainability and ecology, economy, and equity, on the ecology side, it's seeing just as being for all beings, flora and fauna. And when it comes to economy, I see just as being livelihoods being cared for, so that all people who are working in that food system or who are consuming from that food system feel like they are being fully used for their crafts. And then on the equity side, that's making sure that everyone feels their place.
So I want to talk a little bit about the ways to actually connect and bring people together in the food world who are doing like organics, who are, you know, creating community-based like farmers markets, connecting the people who are working in the movement, who are predominantly, I mean, I don't want to discount the work of people of color, but there's this one world where it's predominantly white people working with white people, and then there's this other world where underserved people are not getting the attention, or I mean by definition they're underserved. Right. What does it mean to kind of connect those spaces in those worlds?
It means having an understanding of systemic and institutional discrimination and being able to rectify that economically. There's some very simple, I feel like any practitioners of the food system kind of understand the way that the Farm Bill subsidizes not specialty crops, they subsidize commodity crops. And there are things like that all over the place, how hard it is for farmers to get crop insurance if they want to actually start building healthy soil. There's so many really tangible, concrete things around systemic discrimination of good practices, and rectifying that and knowing that it's going to be really hard and that commitment is necessary to follow it through, and that it's going to be maybe more pain provoking in the short term than we would like, is really necessary.
This is getting into you as the activist, as the change maker. How are you not crippled by massive systems that seemingly are working against you?
Personally? Wow. I talk to like 5 people on a regular basis, and I live in the trees, and neither of those things were things I thought I would ever be, but I had to just acknowledge who I am. And I process a lot of grief on a daily basis. And so my reflective practice and being able to have the tools to process that much grief and see that relationship to joy on the other end when grief is moving and it's not stuck is really necessary. And that's actually something that I would advise for most people right now, is becoming grief processing factories, so that we don't have to ignore all of the craziness that's happening right now, but we also don't have to let that cripple us.
Yeah, you talk about this, especially with leaders, how leaders need to sort of integrate or come to terms, have that kind of inner practice that deals with the pain that they carry with them, that they can then, you know, process it and share their experience authentically with the world. Yeah, I guess it's not a question.
Yes. One thing I would say here, this is another reason why ecosystems are so inspiring to me. Biomimicry is one of my favorite things ever. And I feel like, you know, the pain of when a tree dies, knowing how many habitats died with it, there is, and knowing that trees are so intelligent and they love so deeply, there's a way that then that process of decay and reincorporation is its own, there's beauty there, but it's painful beauty, and it doesn't smell good and it doesn't feel good a lot of times, but it's still beautiful. And I feel like in ecosystems we have precedence for things that we don't do en masse socially.
Yeah, I guess you're kind of talking about the evolution of like where destruction happens, there's also going to be creation. I mean, when those ecosystems get destroyed, those habitats get destroyed, when that tree is now on the ground, it's also now creating new ecosystems and new habitats that maybe weren't what you originally thought was intended for the tree. That kind of gets me to this idea, these three words that you've been kicking around, resist, insist, love, as kind of your approach to I don't know, social justice to life, to like working with people. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah. Me and a couple of friends of mine were kicking around the idea of resist, insist, love, because there's so much resistance happening right now. And it connects to me to the cycle of creation, sustaining, and destruction. That the reminder that it's a cycle, and that destruction tends to be one of the hardest parts for us, is what keeps us going. And remembering that love, as a part of that cycle, as the sustenance component of life, is non-negotiable.
So you're catching me in the middle of my journey. One of the things I struggle with is wanting to empathize and understand the Black experience while not trying to make every, you know, Black person I run into then an ambassador for the Black experience for Black people. But you put yourself in the position where you're in a room full of predominantly white people, it seems like, regularly. So how do you deal with that? Like, how do you approach that? How do you make that work?
My spiritual practice is about non-dualism. And so it's always both. And in that sense, it is hard to be the only one in the room. And so my grounding with my family, which is super, super Black. When I say my family is super Black, I mean super Black. And we are in deep touch and super close. So I feel like my foundation of my people is well held. And on the other hand, we're all just humans. And I feel like I have a really deep practice as well of just meeting every individual where they are and remembering that race is a social construction. But neither one of those is more or less significant to me. They're both equally as true. And it's a very intense dynamic tension to carry at the same time. So in my practice, I learn how to hold polarities at the same time. And that helps.
I think I either read this about you or heard you say it. I'm not sure the source, but the idea of that, of wearing different skins in order to authentically connect with people. It's interesting because you say wearing different skins versus wearing different hats. You know, I think like hats are pretty neutral, but skin is like, that's you. That's a part of you. Could you talk a little bit more about that? Like this idea of authentically connecting with many different people.
Yeah, well, that's fundamental to organizing, and it's fundamental to the kind of, if we're looking for real economic change, that requires compromise and governance. And right now, government and governance have kind of become separate things, unfortunately. But governance requires a deep interrogation of what we hold dear and what we're willing to sacrifice and compromise of that. And the ability to see ourselves in other people is key to the ability to compromise and thus the ability to govern. And so I feel like we're entering a time when we can't leave governance to anyone but ourselves. And we all have to have that skill.
You recently rebranded your firm from Silvestri Strategies to Soil and Shadow. Tell me about that process of kind of changing the image of what you're trying to do.
Well, Soil and Shadow came from this process of me really wanting to know where I'm putting my foot down in the world. And they're both such beautiful words, and I think that they both reflect the foundational message of what I carry, of building fertility in systems is about strengthening the connections between everything and strengthening the complexity of relationships. And so in soil fertility, that feels pretty clear. And focusing on soil fertility in ecosystems management helps to impact everything else and can be economically viable. And so that's what I carry on that side. And on the shadow side, increasing the complexity of relationships between people is rocket science. It's simple, but it's very hard to do. And so talking about social fertility on that side means that it grounds the message of sustainability to me in the fact that it's not going to be easy, and it's going to be really rewarding, and it's going to take vulnerability and courage.
Now, you mentioned this a little bit in your keynote, but I kind of want to finish kind of on the uplifting note, like the work that's being done in this world that's really exciting, that's like change-making, that's bringing people together, you know, over this divisiveness that's being created. Could you tell us what's exciting you? What are you seeing around you that is giving you hope?
Well, that's what I focus on in my work, that there are always, always people that have been trying to do the right thing forever, but doing the right thing and working at the intersections and doing work that's not sexy, quote unquote, is not well resourced because the media doesn't talk about it. And we hold extremes and polarities much easier than we do things that are governing and compromising because, you know, we like drama because we're human. So a lot of my work reinforces the beauty of the things that are in the middle, that are at the intersections, that are already doing all the right things, that are just in need of investment. So almost everyone I touch inspires me now.
Nikki, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
That was Nikki Silvestri, food systems activist and co-founder and CEO of Soil and Shadow Consulting. Nikki is part of the many people telling the truth and fighting for the underserved and underrepresented, which is one of the many things we are trying to do here at KBOO. We need your help to keep bringing the voices of activists like Nikki. Liz and Will are going to tell you how you can help us out here at KBOO.
Thank you, Chris. Yeah, that's a stunningly interesting show and a great interview. I've heard a lot of cooking shows. They have a lot on TV. They even have their own channel for cooking, but nothing as thought-provoking as what you've just provided for us. And I think you folks out there listening would agree with me. And by picking up the phone and dialing 877-500-5266, that's 877-500-5266, you can say thank you to the work Chris does and to all the great guests he's had. You can also get our book, Meet Me at the Bamboo Table. But I feel very fortunate to be part of KBOO radio station. And I know Liz does too. She does a great show on the air.
Aw, thanks,
and my pleasure. It really is my pleasure. And I know you folks out there value KBOO. So please pick up your phone, pledge your support to 877-500-5266.
That's right. And if you are not near a phone, but somehow near access to the interwebs, you can go to kboo.fm, anywhere on planet Earth, become a member that way. We'll mention that you can pick up for $75 membership a copy of Anita Croft's book. She was on the show earlier this hour, here live in the studio with Chris. And you can pick up a copy of her book, Meet Me at the Bamboo Table, for $75. That's just $6.25 a month. Or for that same $75, you could pick up a gift certificate to a Filipino brunch with Chef June Robles at XLB.
Yum.
$75 minimum pledge, which has an amazing menu here, which I'm not going to read because it has all these words in Tagalog and I can't pronounce them, but they sound fabulous, and it's a great way to both support your community radio station and programs like The Food Show and eat really good food. 877-500-5266. This is the last day of our winter membership drive. This is your last opportunity in the depths of winter on this very rainy day to show how important it is that KBOO matters to you and that you feel so strongly about that that you are willing to put a monetary value on how much KBOO matters to you. And we're not going to tell you what that value is. We'll make suggestions, $60 a year, $90 a year, $120 a year. But if, you can choose that number for yourself. We can't do it for you, but we are asking you right now to step up, go beyond the passive part of listening and become an active member supporting your local community radio station at 877-500-5266 or again online at kboo.fm. I want to give a shout out to Chris and all of the other amazing hosts who donate their time to bring you very thoughtful, in-depth programming. As Will mentioned, there are a lot of shows about food, both on the radio and on television, and there is, in fact, a whole network on cable about food. But you rarely get to talk about the underlying things that support food. And
it's very thought-provoking.
It's very thought-provoking, you know, and there are deep roots to what's going on with our food systems, and there are deep issues involved with access to healthy food and deep issues of class and race and issues like that that pertain to food. And you're only going to find that kind of thought-provoking discussion here on KBOO. So show your support right now, 877-500-5266. Our membership director here, Pamela, is here who can speak to the Filipino food. Pamela, you want to speak to the Filipino food for a sec?
I can speak about Filipino food anytime, honestly. As part of my job here, I've been coordinating the food donations and everything that's been going on to make sure our phone volunteers are tireless, amazingly enthusiastic, energetic volunteers are well fed. And yes, I know good food. So I made sure I'm Filipina American, and I definitely do a lot to support a lot of Filipino food on there. And this particular one, it's a breakfast you cannot miss. This is a brunch that is not offered a lot here in Portland. Pan de sal is a special bread, is honestly the first breakfast of every Filipino. Has two different butters, and there's this garlic fried rice and egg that's just like ridiculous, like pickled all.
That sounds
I can't
great.
Even. It's okay, ridiculous.
Okay. We have to pull the mic away from her because that's just terrific. I'm getting too hungry here. Thanks again for everybody who's become a member, and thanks for everybody who's about to become a member, and thanks for everyone who's renewed your membership. And, you know, think about giving membership as a gift to somebody. 877-500-5266 or kboo.fm. Thanks so much. Goodbye.
It's up to you.
You're listening to The Food Show on KBOO. I'm Chris Siegel. It is CSA sign-up time. To talk about the upcoming CSA Share Fair here in Portland, I'm joined by Harriet Fassenfest. Harriet, welcome to The Food Show.
Thanks for having me.
So could you tell us a little bit about the CSA Share Fair that's coming up?
Right. Well, this is the third annual CSA Share Fair. This year we're holding it at the Hollywood Farmers Market, which is an open-air market, and really a lot of people know about it, are familiar with the Hollywood Farmers Market. So what it is farmers, over 40 farmers will be coming, and they are all participating. They all have CSA, which people might know is community-supported agriculture. So they're coming and showcasing their goods, telling people what their programs are, open to the public, it's free. People who are familiar with CSA can come. People who are unfamiliar with CSA have an opportunity to find out what it's about. We have programs that are available for people of all sorts of income brackets. We have, you know, CSA that fits everybody. Different people have different needs, you know, different types of cooks. You know, people need different sizes, different families. It's a fun event. We'll have programs. I mean, we're just supporting local agriculture. We're supporting local farmers, which is, you know, you were just talking about, you know, food justice issues and availability and equity issues as far as food, which KBOO talks about, which we are all about. We're trying to support the local community to get, you know, healthy local food grown in the neighbor, in the community, by small farmers who are attempting to, you know, bring the tilth back to the soil, make food available. You know, really, it's like one of the most exciting opportunities, I think, for people to practice their politics in terms of really supporting a healthy local food movement for all people. So we're just going to do a bunch of different events. It's, again, March 11th, which is coming up pretty quickly. It's from 9 to 2 o'clock at the Hollywood Farmers Market. And you can find out more information by going to portlandcsa.org, which hopefully we can link to your, to KBOO. And then we have a Facebook page also, the third annual CSA Share Fair. So there's lots of information up there, and it's a fun event. You know, we have some classes of people to know themselves, know their farmers, so they have a sense of, they ask questions to themselves, you know, what sort of a partner, I don't really actually even like to call them consumers. I like to think of people as partners in this food movement. This is the eaters and the farmers coming together in just a great positive movement.
Great. Harriet, thank you so much. We are coming to the end of the show, but as a former CSA farmer, I love when events like this happen that bring people together and get to meet their farmers. So thank you so much for putting this on.
You're welcome. And we're just calling it I'm calling it Seeding the Future Together, because we're in this together. So thanks so much for having me on your show.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Harriet.
Okay, hon. Bye-bye.
And that's it for this episode of the KBOO Food Show. If you missed any of the show or want to listen back, you can find the episode archived on the KBOO website at kboo.fm. I want to thank our guests, Anita Verna Crofts, Marisha Auerbach, Nikki Silvestri, and Harriet Fassenfest for being on today's show. I also want to thank our amazing board operator, Tammy. Stay tuned this afternoon for some Jazz Lives. And if you haven't already, be sure to support KBOO this final day of the membership drive. Don't forget to tune in in March, the third Wednesday of March, for another episode of The Food Show. And until next time, I'm Chris Siegel. Thanks for listening.
All right, it's noon. You are tuned to KBOO Portland, and this KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Skyline Tavern Project, a not-for-profit historic saloon at the edge of Forest Park dedicated to supporting art and ecology through live music, food, and horseshoes. 8031 Northwest Skyline Boulevard and skytav.com. And we have a couple of announcements, but Jazz Lives. Stay tuned for Jazz Lives.